All right, so we had some tech problems recently, so we're trying out a new recording system that seems like it's working okay. But just to be on the safe side, in case this episode gets lost and no one ever hears it, I kind of picked a show that probably no one cares about. So if you've clicked on this and you do care about this show, hey, nice to have you. Apologies that I'm insulting the show. But what this is, so we went on a little run of watching shows from the 70s. We watched the Gilligan's Island cartoon, which could have been worse. I mean, it's basically Gilligan's Island, but I mean, I wouldn't recommend it or anything. But then we watched the Star Trek cartoon, which actually was good, and I would recommend if you're a Star Trek fan. It was pretty decent. But as I was researching that stuff of just cartoons of the 70s, because I was born in 79, so I was watching cartoons of the 80s. I'm really not familiar with a lot of these older cartoons. This one stood out to me, Around the World in 80 Days. Because again, that's one of those things I've actually never read the original book. I just know adaptations and different versions. And there's a video game called 80 Days that's a version of going around to the Earth. It's just an interesting concept, you know? Like, it's just interesting. Got to get around the world in 80 days back in the day. So it turns out there is an animated version that came out in 1972. So I'm gonna guess you have not seen this show.
I have not seen it. I've only ever seen the movie. There was a movie made not that long ago, maybe in the last 20 years. I've seen that one. I may have seen an earlier one that had Rex Harrison in it, it seems to me, but I don't remember it. But that's all I've ever seen. It went around the world in 80 days. Jules Verne, isn't it? Wrote that.
It is, yeah, and it is one of those things that, yes, it's sort of a similar situation where I feel like I've just picked up information about this or I've seen versions of it all around. But I guess for me, it is mainly this video game 80 Days, which if I was back home and we were there in person, I'd show it to you, but it'd be very difficult to play over the computer. But it's really cool because the way they did it in the video game is it's, you remember like the steampunk stuff we watched, like Wild Wild West, where it's like the Old West, but there's mechanical steam-powered devices. They did basically Around the World in 80 Days in that style. It's a video game where you've got to book your flights and figure out where to go, or your travel, not your flights, maybe a flight. But it's the basic premise of Around the World in 80 Days, except that there's mechanical, like, you know, you can ride a giant mechanical mastodon or something across the desert and like just all these weird stuff you can do. It was a really good game. But anyway, I just like the premise in general. And obviously I'm traveling right now. I'm in Taiwan, Taipei, Taiwan right now, so it's just neat too. However, the downside to this is it's a 1970s cartoon. So, maybe this is terrible. Like maybe it's cool, maybe it's terrible. I don't know, but I'll tell you what I learned about it. So, Around the World in 80 Days is an animated television series that aired on NBC during the 1972-1973 season for 16 episodes. It was the first Australian-produced cartoon to be shown on American network television. The stories were loosely adapted from the 1873 novel by Jules Verne. I really got to read that novel. I bet I would love it. This show is more comedic in tone than Verne's novel. The motives of Phileas Fogg differ from those of his literary forerunner. In this story, Fogg is passionately in love with Belinda Mays, whose uncle, Lord Mays, sternly disapproves of the commoner Fogg marrying his niece. Fogg proposes a wager. If he and his valet Passepartout can travel around the world in 80 days, then Lord Mays will give him Belinda's hand in marriage. If Fogg fails, he will abandon her. But also, the two men make a side wager of £20,000. Because, romance plot, that's great. But let's also, you know, my lord is a gambling man. So I just grabbed two episodes of this. It seems pretty easy to find. I think I got these off archive.org. I grabbed the first episode and then I grabbed the episode where they go to Japan. And I was like, oh, that could be neat. Let's see what the 1972 take on Japan is through the eyes of an Australian cartoon producing company. But the little bit that I checked just to click to make sure the file is working okay, I believe we are in for some stereotypes. I think it's going to be an inelegant presentation of Japan.
Well, but the show itself, now that you mentioned the name Phineas Fogg, I thought, who? I saw David Tennant in the, David Tennant from
Doctor Who, right?
Doctor Who and various other things. He, in the movie that I saw not too long ago, David Tennant is Phileas Fogg. And there are a lot of stereotypes written into the show that I saw. Because, of course, when Jules Verne wrote that thing 100 years ago or whatever, stereotypes would be a real big deal. And people would have been like when he goes to these foreign countries, I'm sure they are just very stereotypical people. You don't get a whole lot of depth there. So, I remember it quite well now when the show with David in it.
Was it good? Should I watch that?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was good.
Mayhap I will, because, it's nice to claim I'm going to read the book, but I don't know. I used to be such a big reader, and nowadays it's just so tough to read a book, but maybe I'll watch that instead. But yeah, for now, anyone who wants to watch along with us, Around the World in 80 Days, this is episode 1 and episode 14. And like I said, archive.org, I believe, has these. It also looks a little strange because, I guess to like up the quality, somebody went through and they did artificial intelligence, like AI upscaling, to make the show higher resolution. But you can kind of tell it looks a little unnatural. It doesn't quite look like it originally looked, but it's the version we got. It seems fine. It'll do.
Okay, well, let's check it out.
Phileas Fogg, you want to marry me, niece Belinda?
Yes, Lord Mayor.
Then prove yourself worthy. Travel around the world in 80 days.
Impossible!
We shall do it! And bet your £20,000 you can't! It's a bet!
Around the world in 80 days. Passepartout. So far, we marry Belinda Mays. Passepartout.
It's come here.
Yes, Lord Mayor. At your service.
Stop Fogg from traveling around the world in 80 days. I must win that bet.
So I guess if I was to say something nice, I like the visual design, like if you just saw that playing on a TV with the sound off, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. Pretty cool little designs for these characters and stuff. But when you turn on the sound, that's when problems begin.
I don't even know that I could be so generous. The colors are good, nice bright colors, but whoa, what an awful show.
Yeah, I guess even design-wise, I guess it's just Fogg. I like Phileas Fogg. I like how he looks. I like how he talks. I like how he acts. He's a cool customer. Every other character is like in a competition to see who can be the most obnoxious and the most annoying and who can cloyingly repeat their catchphrases the most number of times. I mean, even Fogg, he has his too, I guess. But yeah, because I feel like even after the first episode, it's already just tiresome with, what is it that the French dude Passepartout says? It's,
Parlez-vous.
Yeah.
Parlez-vous. Like, oh, will you shut up?
Yeah.
Stop parlaying.
I was trying to think of like French exclamations. And I guess the problem is that they're all vaguely blasphemous. So maybe they could offend somebody. So, but I've never heard a French person say parlez-vous.
Yeah, but they could have said, oh mon dieu, or sacre bleu. Or something like that. Not parlez-vous.
and he is the worst. Passepartout is the worst. He's definitely the main character. He talks the most. He's the loudest. And he's just... Yeah, like I assume, since this was an Australian production, it's probably just Australians doing these voices, which pretty bad in the Japan one, too. I mean, it's what you would expect from 1972 or 1973. It is just the stereotypical... like in the old Rice Krispies commercials and stuff, the stereotypical look of an Asian guy back then and just the flip the R's and the L's, just these little crumbs of reality, but let's just crank them up to super stereotype levels. But again, that's like one episode set in Japan and it's a 1970s kids cartoon. It's somewhat understandable. But Passepartout is in every scene of every episode and they couldn't have picked a worse voice actor. He doesn't sound French. He doesn't sound pleasant. He's just annoying on every level. Like, what was that all about?
And it's almost like he is the star of the show, as opposed to Phileas Fogg, who is supposed to be the star. Passepartout, he's like the main man there, and he is so annoying. It's so flat, though, too. This is obviously just a kid's cartoon. It is not geared for anybody older than probably 10 years old.
If even.
It has no depth to it. It is just flat. One layer, one level. Bad versus good.
Yeah. Oh, and what was the Mr. Fix, right? He's the guy's trying to mess them up. That was the other thing. Passepartout not only constantly exclaims, parlez-vous, he yells, fix his tricks, you know, when they realize that Mr. Fix has gotten in their way. But he just yells it like he's like a four-year-old having a tantrum. It's like so annoying. It's just like, what an annoying take on this particular fucking story.
I think Jules Verne would be embarrassed to think that his name was connected with anything that is that boring and flat.
Yeah, and I guess if anything, it maybe gives extra points to that Star Trek cartoon, because in many ways, this is very much a cartoon of the time. When I think of 1970s cartoons, like, this is more or less what I would expect something to be. Or this is more in line with the Gilligan Show, you know, like weird sound effects. This didn't have a laugh track, at least, but, you know, a cartoon monkey, you know, it's got all the stuff. But I guess that's what makes me extra impressed with the Star Trek show, is that this is the era of super goofy cartoons that, you know, maybe a 10-year-old would watch, but I feel like a 10-year-old is probably already aging out. So it's just kind of cool that, people mentioned also, they did leave some comments on that episode, that there were some other shows at the time, like Johnny Quest and C-Lab, that were also serious cartoons. So it wasn't just Star Trek. But yeah, it does seem like the 70s had a great knack for really cool, serious cartoons, and they were just rotten at, like, funny cartoons, because they weren't freaking funny. They were just painful.
And I've used this expression before, where there's a certain show that for children, they feel they've got to dumb it down. Well, this one dumbed it down. I mean, I could see some little child who is only about a year old sitting in their little walker watching that, just because of the animation and the colors and the difference in voice changes and not understanding the show itself. But they dumbed it down, because if you were 5 or 6 years old watching that, yes, you'd watch it. But I don't know that it has to be so just one level. Like, hey, kid, in case you're too stupid to figure this out, we're going to lay it right out for you. I found it annoying, boring. I felt like laying down and going to sleep.
Yeah, and the constant repetition of the little catchphrases. Yeah, like this, that we only watched 2 episodes. And yeah, we just got hammered with those things like 16 times. Like, it's one thing to say yabba dabba doo once in a while or to have tropes, but they just, it's like they turned it up to 10 with this. Like, I don't know who thought that was a good idea.
If I had heard parlez-vous one more time, oh my God, I would have liked to reach out and just strangle that little guy. Stop parlaying, buddy.
So that was undeniably miserable. But the good thing is, I guess this got us onto an 80 days kick. Because, yeah, it looks like next week we are, in fact, going to watch the David Tennant show. We'll check that out. But while we're here, to bridge the gap in the meantime, I was saying that there's this video game, 80 Days, that is my main exposure to this story. So I did actually find, because it would be neat to show you the game, but it's very in-depth. Like, it takes a long time to play a game of this. So I don't know that I'd be able to get across what it is without having to sit here for 3 hours, watch somebody play 80 days.
Oh, 3 hours. I thought you were going to say 80 days. It would take us 80 days to get it.
Yeah, no, not quite that slow, but it is. It's a fairly in-depth game. But I found a little review. It's this site, Cool Ghosts, that I don't think they currently still exist, because this was 8 years ago. They did this review of this game. But I thought we could just watch this, because it's just a little 10-minute. They do like a little skit, like they pretend it's like, you know, like, hey, kids, here's a cool video game or whatever. And then the joke is that it's this very staid, serious, text-based game about 80 days. So let's just watch that, just so I can show you a little bit of what the 80 days game is like, because it's a super-duper cool game.
Okay.
Okay, so it's called 80 Days. It's so good. It's based on a Jules Verne novel, Around the World in 80 Days, right? And you take in the sights of far-flung cities like Tehran or Vladivostok, but you gotta take care of your master, because he can get like seasick or really sad, so you gotta play backgammon with him, you gotta keep his spirits up, and then worry about things like train timetables. 80 Days isn't actually a game about racing, it's about traveling, and to that end, its world is bananasly crazy. You have no idea what ideas and events are waiting for you in each city, and you pop them into your brain one after another like narrative Haribo. What will Africa be like? What's waiting for you in the Arctic? You only know it's going to be really interesting and awesome, and time's against you, so you keep moving. The world isn't some drab mirroring of Jules Verne's book, all right? Forget the book. It mirrors the mood at the time, that the world is this wonderful place and we should explore it with badass machines. It also mirrors the book in that it's an action-packed yarn. There are pickpockets and murderers and deadly stunts waiting for you out there, and Phileas Fogg and Passepartout handle it all with cunning and bravery and a dollop of moustache wax. But the flip side of a game about travelling is that 80 Days is laced with heartbreak. No sooner have you encountered something or someone wonderful that you have to say goodbye forever. Let me tell you a story. I was on the Trans-Siberian Railway with my master, crossing Russia, and I met this girl, right? She's a brilliant mathematician, and she's coming back home to Kazakhstan because Europe isn't ready for a woman scientist. And out there on the viewing platform with the land whipping past and huddled in our winter coats, we share a moment, and then we share a kiss. And then what happened? And that was it. She got off at the next stop. You know, maybe we could have followed her, but we had a boat to catch. And I'll tell you what happened next. I got told off by my master, because it's not done for a servant to flirt with people on the journey. I actually know you can meet up with her again in South America, though.
How?
I have no idea. Actually, 80 Days is full of mysteries. I know that you can go to the center of the Earth if you book your destinations right. And together with the Steam release, they've added Atlantis and the Moon. In fact, there's so much content in 80 Days that you're gonna play it again and again. Out of its 170 cities, you might only see 30 on a single trip. But your playthroughs will always feel like your playthroughs because you got to make so many fun decisions in every city. Because of how 80 Days is structured, the developers could create really fun branching plots, because you're always leaving the consequences of your actions behind you, where the developers don't have to worry about them. So you can go to Beijing and fly out of there on a robot bird while I get mugged and sleep under the stars, and the developers can just get back to filling the next city with more branching plots. The only constant is the relationship between you and Master Fogg, and that's as fun as everything else in this game. You're his servant, and that's a role that video games never usually explore, but oh, it's so fun because everything you do feels illicit. You can fight to keep him from harm or roll your eyes at him being seasick again. You can respect him or fall in love with him or hate him. You can try and wriggle out from under his thumb, but the only constant is that at the end of the day, he will still be your master and he'll occasionally surprise you. I mean, this is a game that wants to make you laugh and cry, that covers politics and questions about colonialism and war. There's romance and action sequences of all, and all of it's so well written that everyone's going to have a different bit that touched them, and that's kind of the multiplayer. It's you telling people what touched you.
So I don't know that that's the best description. I mean, it's just such a tough game where it's like, how do I even describe what this game is? And like I was saying, to show you a playthrough would take forever. So I was like, oh, I don't know. Those cool ghost guys, they're okay. But again, that gives you a little taste, I guess, of what it is.
Sounds interesting, though. It sounds like the kind of thing that if you were into history and adventure, yeah, it sounds like it'd be very, very cool to play.
Yeah, it makes me think I should play it again. I haven't played it in a few years. But yeah, and it's interesting because it's partially accurate and partially just made up nonsense. And that reminded me of some stuff I'd forgotten, that because you are the valet, like there's the little comb icon. I forgot about that. Like you're traveling on a train across like a desert and it's really hot out. And maybe Fogg is a little, he's so fastidious in that game that like maybe he ate something and his stomach's a little off. So you have to decide, like, are you going to go try to gather information about, like, okay, we're on our way to Egypt. What's going to happen when we get there? Where are we going next? Do I go canvas the train and look for stuff? Or do I spend time with Master Fogg and, like, comb his hair and, you know, iron his clothes and, you know, make him feel better about the journey? Or do you just go off and say, like, the hell with all of this and go do your own thing? And that's when you can have the weird little side adventures and romances and stuff. And yeah, I mean, I've probably played that game like 15 times, and every time it's just different because you never know what timetable is going to be available to you and what routes you can actually take. And different stuff happens every time because it's mostly text. So they just wrote a boatload of text. So anyway, yeah, like again, I don't know, maybe when I'm back in Canada, we can fire it up and I can show you that game. But just to counterbalance a little, since we watched such a bad version of Around the World in 80 Days, we can counterbalance with like, oh, there's that video game that was a really good version. And then next week, we'll move on to the TV show, which, again, hopefully, will just continue the trek of good versions.